The D2C Growth Show.
Hi, welcome to the D2C Growth Show by Hashtag Paid. My name is Roger, and every episode I sit down with founders and leaders in e-commerce, and we talk about everything from starting, launching, and growing a brand. And today I'm excited because I'm finally getting to interview Val Geisler. She's the CEO of Fix My Churn. She works with e-commerce brands to increase conversion, reduce churn, and she's a boss on Twitter, always sharing something valuable. Val, thanks so much for being here today.
I'm so stoked to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Tell us about Fix My Churn. Tell us what you're doing there.
Oh, yeah. So we are obsessed with churn reduction. The focus for us is email. Email is the main point of communication between you and your customers. Unless they're choosing to come onto your website, there's no real way to talk to them. I mean, you can do some retargeting ads and things like that, but there's no direct way to make sure that you're reaching people unless you have an email list. And so email is how we bring new customers in. It's how we onboard new customers. So whether they, post-purchase flows, abandoned cart series, things like that. And then email is how we keep customers around. So I work with a lot of subscription brands. We work on their email campaigns, their SMS, the kind of email is the center of it. And then there's this whole like ecosystem that affects churn. And that is, are you linking to their dashboard? Well, what does the dashboard look like? Are you linking to a FAQ page? What does that look like? So we kind of start with email, and then we look at what are you sending people to from email and what also works in conjunction with email, like SMS, to make this cohesive messaging that helps people feel seen and heard, because ultimately that's just what people want, is to feel like they matter and they understand. And that they are understood, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what we do. And it centers around email. We work with DTC and SaaS brands. And we tend to work with brands that are subscription-based, though we do work with those who aren't on occasion. And sometimes people who like want to do a subscription. I've worked with t-shirt brands that want to do like a t-shirt a month club, you know? So initially working off of kind of one-off sales of whatever t-shirt the person decides to buy at that time, to shifting more to like a membership model. So membership, subscription, that kind of thing.
From your experience, what does it take to get a brand from, you know, one-off purchases to becoming a subscription brand? What are some of the things, what are some of the steps you take to get there?
Yeah, well, literally just launching it. Like your customers want it. And that's the thing is, the t-shirt brand, they launched their subscription on a Friday, and then by Monday they had like 1,300 subscribers.
Wow.
To get a t-shirt every month. That is not something that you need in your life. You don't need 12 t-shirts a year. But it's something that they want because they feel really seen and heard by that brand. And it's something that is exciting to them. It's new. And so now like, okay, yeah, they think that they want this. And so then 3 months down the line, 4 months, five, now they're starting to have this pile up of shirts that maybe they are or are not wearing, depending on what else they have in their wardrobe. So how do you keep them around? That's kind of the bigger question. I think it's less about like, how do we launch the subscription? Because really that's just, it's honestly like a logistics thing. How are you going to either bundle products or on your logistics side and your like shipping and all of that, are you prepared to do subscription? If the answer is yes, then launch it. But launch it smartly, because it's less about how do we start a subscription and more about how do we keep a subscription and not have it be like a failed experiment.
It's not about how do we start it, it's about how do we keep it. That is
good
advice.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's like, you know, we see all the time, and I'm getting these messages, especially right now, being like fall, heading into Black Friday, everyone's saying like, oh, well, you know, I know this is super important, onboarding, you know, welcome sequences, all of this, like, it's super important, I know, and I'm going to go focus on acquisition right now. And I'm not saying acquisition isn't important, but what are you going to do when you are acquiring all these new customers and spending money to get these new customers in the door? And then they have the same kind of subpar experience that the customers you're already seeing leaving are having. They're going to have that same churn experience as well. So I think that acquisition and retention need to be friends and like exist together. So you're not taking your eye off of retention to focus solely on acquisition, but thinking about retention while doing acquisition. And then, you know, when you, so maybe it's like a 70-30 thing, right? Like you're, okay, I'm going to do 70% acquisition, but I'm also going to work a little bit on retention. And then maybe when acquisition slows down, like everyone's talking about holiday and how all the huge brands are going to be buying up all the ads. And so acquisition is going to get more expensive and all of that. Okay, so then we won't focus as much on acquisition and we'll pay more attention to retention. We'll still obviously have an acquisition channel, but you know, those things can flip flop depending on the time of year and whatever cycle you're in. But I think that they both need focus. And you know, I kind of think like, what if you never acquired another customer? How would you continue to run your business? And that's like the question that I ask all of our clients is, what would we do to keep customers around long-term? That if we never got a new customer in the door. And it's an interesting puzzle, right? Like it's an interesting question to ask yourself, because some brands think like, well, we don't have a subscription model. I don't know how I would do that. I was talking with some people who they sell sheets. So sheets, you don't need a new pair of sheets every month, but maybe you do every quarter. Or maybe you do twice a year, that's still a subscription. Mm. And then how do you keep people happy with that? I get a box, like it's a subscription box, you know, with lots of different products from different brands in it, and it's quarterly. And I had that subscription for 2 years before, and I was using it as like gathering things to give as gifts to other people. So I kind of had like a good backlog of gifts. But I also wasn't actively gifting those things. So had that company written me emails about ways I could gift those things, or every day has some kind of, it's like National Love Your Dog Day and National Left Handers Day, and there's like a holiday for every day of the year. Maybe talking about some of those things and like sharing some opportunities that remind me to gift the things that are sitting in a giant box in my basement that I've collected over the last 2 years from them. Maybe if that had happened, I wouldn't have canceled my subscription because I wouldn't have had this big backlog of gifts. And maybe their audience isn't buying to gift. Maybe their audience is buying to stock their own home. But, you know, they don't know that unless they talk to their customers.
Interesting that you just mentioned that, because that's a use case that maybe they didn't think about. And I've heard you say this before, that sometimes, you know, products are launched because of some need the founder had or some need that he heard of, but there's a whole bunch of other use cases that customers have that you may not know about. And in this case, it's just the simple kind of like re-gifting, or kind of taking what's in a subscription box and then using it as sort of like a backlog of gifts that you can use for special days throughout the year.
Right.
Just knowing sort of the different use cases that people have.
Yes. So, and that comes down to talking to your customers and understanding what they're doing. And I could be the only customer they have that has that use case. It's probably unlikely though, because they sell, like they have this nice curated box of beautiful things that are giftable items, throw pillows and like salad tongs and candles and earrings. Like I don't need all of those things in my home. So there is a good use case for, even if I'm not going to gift the entire box and keep a few things for myself. So, you know, it's like, you don't know those things until you talk to your customers. And I can't tell you how many times we've done customer interviews and end up with an insight into, you know, okay, well, here's a, we call them jobs. So we use a framework called Jobs to be Done. And I can talk more about that. But so here's a job that a customer has for your brand. And every single time our clients are saying like, oh, wow, I never really thought about that. And so that's where segmenting is super powerful, because you get to realize that this is a pretty solid job that your brand has, that a decent amount of your customers are coming to your brand for this reason. And if you can find out why they're coming to you and like ask them either on your site, if you want to build that in, sometimes we do it in email with clicking on a link. And then that segments them. And then they get emails that are specific to their use case. And they feel, again, seen and heard. Like that helps them feel like, okay, I am in the right place and these people get why I'm here. And, they feel like they matter, especially if you interview them and ask them their use case and then send them targeted emails based on that.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And I had this question here to ask you, but it is about the jobs to be done framework that you use, because you talk about it a lot and I love it. I'd love to hear more about sort of why you think it's valuable.
So jobs is pretty widely used in the SaaS world, and that's where I learned the most about it. And I had the great pleasure of working with one of the creators of jobs and observing him doing interviews, and it was fascinating. The idea is that there is a job that your customer is, quote, hiring your brand to do. Mm-hmm. And it is not the job that we are, typically not the job that we are marketing. So we might say, let's take like Bombas socks, because everybody, everyone's always kind of pointing to Bombas. So let's say like Bombas is saying that they have the softest socks that you'll ever wear. But there could be other jobs besides just having soft socks, maybe socks that don't move when you're running, that don't slide down in your shoe, maybe socks. And I don't know, but like, some people are really annoyed by the seam inside of the socks on the toes, maybe socks that are seamless on the toes. Maybe like socks that you don't think about your socks all day, there are certainly brands I've worn them where I'm like pulling them up all the time. Wiggling my toes around, trying to get comfortable. My feet are sweaty, all those things. So unless they do those interviews and know all those different use cases and those different jobs that people are hiring Bombas to do, then they can't speak to that. And they're just going to continue to talk about how soft their socks are. But unless I know that they're going to stay in place while I'm doing a high intensity interval training session, I don't care how soft they are. I care that they're going to not make me think about my socks when I'm weightlifting or jumping as high as I can, So I think it's really important to understand the words that your customers use to describe why they are choosing your brand, and then repeat those words back to them. I've said this on other podcasts before, and it's something that I semi-joke about, but I am not a formally trained copywriter. So I always like to say I'm not a copywriter. I'm a copy paster because I literally take transcripts from one-to-one interviews and long form qualitative data surveys and copy and paste those words into email subject lines and body copy and calls to action. And then my clients get to take all of that with them long after our project is over, and they get to copy and paste it onto their marketing site and onto their sales pages and product descriptions. So it's incredibly valuable to do research, not just from an email standpoint, but just from an overall brand standpoint.
And I love that you've done this, because when I went to check out your bio on LinkedIn, let me pull it up here quick. Here's what you say. Take positive metrics to your Monday all hands meetings. See that bar graph show more green than red. And I love it, because you got in my head. That's exactly sort of, the things that I go through as a marketer. I got to show up and I got to show more green than red. And it does feel like you've done it. Like you're kind of eating your own dog food in a sense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I know like it's that there is sometimes that case of like shoemaker's kids, the shoemaker's kids that have no shoes. I hear this from copywriters all the time. Like I so badly need to rewrite my website, or all of my friends who run Shopify development sites are like, I need to rebuild my website, but I'm busy rebuilding other people's websites. So I think that there is a lot of case for that, but I also know how important research is, and I do it constantly with my clients. And then I try to weave some of that in into our own business as well. I mean, that's where Fix My Churn came from. It was like, what are people wondering about? And this was when I was doing consulting, just me. This was kind of the question that people would pose in conversation. So they would come to me for emails and then they would say, but you know, like what I really need to do is fix our churn problem. And so I want to do that with you through all these other things. And I heard that over and over again. We need to fix our churn. We need, like, I want to fix my churn. Great. So I bought the .com and it's, you know, that, but it's because I heard those words over and over again. And I heard them for a year. You don't have to spend a year doing customer research. When I do it with clients, we spend about a month doing it. And I recommend doing it at least twice a year. But you don't have to put a ton of time into it. And these were in regular conversations I was having too, you know? So it was like just observing the words people are using.
Absolutely.
Be curious about the people who integrate with your brand.
So fundamental. And I find it astonishing that more marketers don't do that. I find it astonishing.
Yeah. It's like you wouldn't be a brand without your customers. So why would you not want to know who they are and what they think and the problems that bother them? And, you know, you might be a food brand targeting a particular, like maybe you're targeting, let's say, busy families, right? So like a HelloFresh or something like that, where you're saying, okay, well, let's take this cooking problem off your plate. But it's not actually a cooking problem. It's a, like, I have to, well, pre-COVID, I have to like go pick up my kids from three different schools. And then we have an after-school activity and then we get home. And, oh, also tonight I need to make sure they take showers and baths. And now I have like 25 minutes to make dinner and I forgot to defrost something. And so if you can tell that story versus just like, take the dinner prep off your hands. It's just so much more personal. And people can see themselves in that car driving around realizing they forgot to defrost some chicken. You know, so your customers have had similar experiences to each other. And when you can tell those stories through email and on your marketing site and in your blog posts and on your YouTube and wherever else you are, then, you know, it's incredibly powerful.
Totally.
And a lot of brands have it already. Everyone talks about user-generated content all the time. For like Instagram, let's use UGC and in our retargeting ads and all of that. That's all your voice of customer research right there. Like they're telling the stories. They're telling you the exact words they need to hear. And let's use those in emails. Let's use them in our retention campaigns and in your post-purchase flows. Like what are people thinking about right after they purchase before your product is delivered? So, you know, I think like we get wrapped up in use cases for like, oh, well, UGC is for these things. Well, it's for a lot of things, you know?
I was going to say, what I love about this advice here is that it doesn't really matter whether you're in SaaS or e-commerce, whether you're in B2B or B2C, it doesn't really matter. Like this is true across the board. This is fundamental marketing. And I love that.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that you work with SaaS and e-commerce. What are some things that you've seen? A lot of people, not a lot of people, some people pit them against each other. What are some things kind of that transcend the SaaS e-commerce fields that kind of like, you know, what else applies to both that you've seen?
Yeah, it's super interesting to have a foot in both places because there's so much that e-commerce can learn from SaaS and vice versa. I see more and more SaaS companies coming to us for, they call them abandoned cart flows. And it's really fun because, you know, that's something I've wanted for a long time is to see more SaaS companies doing essentially an abandoned cart flow, which e-commerce does all the time. There are, you know, one thing SaaS does really well is in a lot of cases is storytelling. Because they don't have 50 different products in their product line, and beautiful images and, you know, packaging that they worked hard on, and photo shoots of their clothes and all those things, right? Like the things that we have in e-commerce. SaaS has like their dashboard and whatever is on the app. And so that's limited of what you can show on a visual. So SaaS tends to have to do more storytelling and like walking people through the app. And here's what, you know, here's what you need to know. Here's how you can be successful here. And that's something e-commerce can do more of. E-commerce is like, look at our beautiful packaging, look at these pictures, and then buy it. But then there's a piece missing of like, how do I use this? SaaS does, like, onboarding is a norm in the world of SaaS. How do we onboard new customers onto this platform? Mm-hmm. But it's not really a norm in the world of e-commerce, where like, how do we teach these new customers about our brand, about what they just purchased, before it ever arrives at their house? Because essentially, and then like also those first 2 weeks that they've had the product, right? Or maybe within the return period or something like that. There's like a period of time where they're kind of testing your product in the same way that if you use a SaaS product, you have a free trial that you're testing the product on. And your customers have that ability to say like, this works or it doesn't. And so it's our job as brands to say, here's how you can use this. Here are some other people using it. You know, here are some ideas for recipes if you're a food company. Outfit like option, you know, how to dress it up, how to dress it down if you sell clothes. A makeup, something from makeup that's like a multi-stick, all the different ways you can use it. A day night look, all those things. Like if you think about how people use your brand, then, you know, figure that out and tell that story, in the same way that a SaaS company is telling the story of how, people are using their product.
I agree. And so that's SaaS, that's e-commerce. And now last year you did something that doesn't relate to either, I think, or maybe it does. You checked out every single presidential candidate's email flow. You signed up for every single one.
I did. Okay. Who do you think it was 25 candidates at the time.
Wow. Who do you think did best? Who's the standout that you remember?
It was interesting. So I was doing that project and then COVID happened and my kids were home full time with me and I had to abandon that because it was a pretty intense like daily thing. But, you know, there across the board, there were all kinds of different results. So in big campaigns would hit spam and little campaigns wouldn't. And then it would flip. So like I, in my inbox, and of course there's also the like every inbox has a different reputation and every brand has a different reputation in that sender. So like I was using a brand new Gmail address. Mm. Like Kamala Harris's emails landed in my spam a bunch. She also sent more frequently than pretty much anyone else, except for Bernie. So, you know, there's, and then like even the little guys, you know, they were doing more storytelling. They were incorporating a blend of asking for money, which is the like number one job of political campaigns. They were doing that, but they were also telling stories. And actually I remember, a campaign from Bloomberg, which of course everyone says, well, like he doesn't have to ask for money. So maybe he had more room to do storytelling, but he had a bunch of storytelling emails. So there is that case to say like, well, he doesn't need to do as much asking. And so you might, thinking about the SaaS world, like a VC backed company might not need to do as much selling right up front as like getting people on free trials or a freemium kind of product. So there are that kind of like don't need to do it, quote, like don't need to do as much selling happens in different industries. But what I thought was really interesting in the political campaigns was that blend of how often are we asking for money, and then how often are we making it about the reader and telling, like, talking to us about how we're going to use the money that you're donating, and like what we're doing. Don't even talk about the money. Don't even say like, hey, or here's how we're going to use the money you're donating, but to say, here's what we're doing out in the community right now. And not what our plans are long-term, but what we're doing right now. Tell the story of what's happening with you and your customers. So donations, those are customers for political campaigns. Tell the story of what's happening and then ask. Yeah. And lots of the campaigns did that really well. Lots of them did not. it was a lot of campaigns at the time. So, and like in the course of working on that spreadsheet, I started it in over Thanksgiving, and then it went until March. And over the course of that time, lots of them dropped out. You know, that was kind of like a big time for people to drop out of the race. And their emails were saying like, hey, we're not reaching our fundraising goal, the ones who were dropping out. So what was interesting, though, was people who would drop out, there was a set of people who would never email again. Once they were out of the race, we're done with this email list. There's a whole other set of people who continued to email their list to either choose someone to support or to continue to push on their own issues. You know, you still have a job, even if you're not running for president anymore. You still have a job, and you now have this group of supporters, and you can pivot. So, you know, as long as you have their buy-in on doing that. So there, it was interesting to see like this split of people who never use the list again, and then people who continued to reach out. And that's an important piece too, in the learning for other brands, is continuing to reach out to people after they have bought from you. So this happens a lot in SaaS. People will, they convert to a paid account, and then you never hear from that brand again. Never another email, except for your receipt every month that you are paying. And then the like twice a year when they launch a whole bunch of new features and email you about it. And then even on the e-commerce side, like, okay, cool, you made a purchase. Now you're just on our regular email list and you're getting our promos, and that's it. You know, I think that that's doing your customers a disservice. So, you know, I think that it's interesting to think about, how do we continue to talk to people after they have paid us, after our quote job has been done, like after we've done what we set out to do, whether it's convert them to a paid account or get them to buy our product or donate to our campaign? How do we keep talking to them, and like what kind of content makes sense there?
I find it concerning if a brand has nothing to say. Like if I'm not buying and you have nothing to tell me or say to me, I find that very concerning, and it's not good practice. Like there's such a huge opportunity.
Yeah. Well, and there's also that, like we have to think about how email is received. Like how, think about your own email experience when you are planning your campaigns. There, you know, in real life, remember when we used to see people and you'd go somewhere and someone would be like, oh, hey, Roger, what's up? You know? And you're like, I don't know who this person is. And they're like, oh, yeah, hey, you know, we met at Jessica's party last, you know, 6 months ago. It's good to see you again. And you're like, right, right. Okay, cool. Now I have a sense of, I kind of remember meeting you. That happens in email too. If you don't email people on your list for 6 months, and show up in their inbox like, hey, what's up? Come buy our thing. Or here's our Black Friday campaign. We haven't talked to you all year. You know, they're like, how did I get on this email list? Who even is this brand? What am I doing here? And unlike in person, you can kind of fumble around and figure that out. In an inbox, they're going to delete the email at best and would mark you as spam at worst. So you have to continue that conversation. You know, if that person who saw you 6 months later, was like, oh, hey, what's up, Roger? Yeah, good to see you again. You know, actually, I need a job. And you're like, oh, cool. I don't remember you at all. And here you are asking me for a job. That's what we're doing when we don't email customers for an extended period of time. And even like 2 weeks can feel like 6 months in the world of email. You know, ever since COVID, people are getting more emails than ever before because we're all doing e-commerce. We're all shopping online. We're all ordering groceries and food online. So we're getting a ton more emails than we ever did. So you have to make sure that in the course of a 2 week period, have you talked to your customers and been in that mix of hundreds of emails they've received? Because by the time you get around to talking to them, they could completely forget ever signing up for your list, ever having purchased from you, ever acknowledging your brand exists.
I couldn't agree more.
It starts to look like you bought the list, you know? Like, I've definitely been in that situation. I was in that situation this morning. How did I get on this list? I don't remember this. And sometimes brands pivot, you know, they'll change their brand name and then they don't like announce it. They just kind of change it and hope everyone's okay with it. But yeah, it just is like, I don't know, it feels awkward. And the inbox is kind of the most personal way we can communicate digitally. And so we have to think about it just like an in-person experience, you know?
I love that you make the analogy to real life, because it sort of makes the point. You'd never, like, if I haven't seen you in a year and you come in like, hey, how's it going? I need a job. That's what we're doing on email. That's what it feels like to the customer. That analogy, I think, helps empathize and sort of.
Yeah. And it's also like that person you haven't seen in a year that you were introduced to in passing at a party. Like, I barely remember meeting you. And so this is what happens when people sign up for our email list and they don't hear from us for weeks at a time. And you know, it's the exact same experience. I love analogies because it does that. It helps you realize like, oh, that's what I'm doing to my customers. And you know, I've talked a lot about the dinner party strategy in various different places. And I do have, if anybody's interested in, so dinner party strategy is kind of a very similar analogy about like how we do welcome people into our world, whether it's SaaS or e-commerce. And you know, it's that idea of like, you don't greet people for a dinner party with a plate of steak at the door and like hand them a fork and knife and say, go ahead and eat as they're like standing on your doorstep. But that's what we're doing as brands in email. And, so anyways, I have a downloadable guide for the dinner party strategy, and I've definitely talked at length about it in other places. And, I'm always happy to chat about that.
I'm going to link it in the show notes and on our website. Cool. I'm going to link it, for anybody who's listening. I want to honor our time.
It's at,
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, if anyone's listening right now and is, you know, sitting in front of a computer and wants to grab it, it's at fixmychurn.com/TDPS.
TDPS, the dinner party strategy. Yeah. I love it. I want to honor our time together, but I did tweet that I was going to be interviewing you, and if people had questions, they could drop them, that I would try to get them answered. So maybe we could do a speed round here. Maybe you can give me
let's do a rapid fire.
I'm going to throw you a softball to start. Rachel, she's asking, where do you get your t-shirts from?
She probably means my email t-shirts. The one I'm wearing currently is from Outdoor Voices. She probably means my email t-shirts though. And I collect those all over the place, email events, and really good email sells some shirts sometimes. So I'm always on the hunt for some good email shirts.
Awesome. Asad asks, he's asking, after you've moved from blasting to segmenting, what's the next logical step? Nurturing automation. I feel like my email program is stagnant.
Yeah. And I said on Twitter, never blast people, right? Like maybe you were blasting and now you're segmenting. Great. Then you want to start looking at the life cycles. So look at that customer journey. How are they moving through your brand? And what kind of campaigns do you have in place to support those life cycles? So life cycle would be like that post-purchase flow. Reactivating a customer who hasn't purchased in a while, converting a regular customer into a subscriber. All of those things are based on the customer journey. So I would start looking at those campaigns, because once you get those up and running, then they are automated and they just continue to support you so that you can go back and put more focus into those one-off campaigns again. The quote blasts, and you know, do your segmenting and all of that. But those automations will keep running in the background and support the ongoing emails. So that's why we love focusing on those lifecycle campaigns, because they get to support your business as a whole while you get to go off and do other things.
Absolutely. Dana Larkin, she's asking, what are some ways companies annoy their email lists and how can we avoid them?
Annoy their email
list? Yeah. So what are some ways companies annoy their email lists and how do we avoid them?
Yeah. Yeah. Always asking for something. So brands that do nothing but, hey, we're running a sale. Hey, come buy this. Hey, this is back in stock. We want those as consumers. We want to know when we can get something at a better price or when something's back in stock. But if that's the only message you have for us, that's about you, not about your customers. So do some storytelling, mix in some emails that tell success stories, that talk about your brand. We're not, especially probably most people listening to this, are not like Target or Walmart or the giant brands of the world, Best Buy, you know. We are smaller brands who have personalities behind the brand. And the difference that we can make, like, yeah, I can go on Amazon and buy something really quick, but if I can support a Black-owned bookshop in my own hometown, then I'm going to order from them, even if shipping takes an extra week and a half, or if I have to like go down there and do in-store pickup. I'm going to do that if I feel connected to that brand. So use your company, not use it, but like talk about your company, talk about the people behind it and why you started it, and help them connect to you as a brand so that they're not shopping on Amazon and, doing all those other things.
Tiffany, she's asking, how do you build a list from scratch when the market is saturated with some pretty amazing email newsletters already?
Yeah, it's a great question. It kind of just depends on your industry, but I think consistently producing really great content that your audience is looking for. So finding a niche subject and talking about it regularly. This is what I did. So I was kind of a generalized marketer. I realized I loved email so much and decided to specialize in it. And then every week for 6 months, I wrote a onboarding teardown on my blog. I would sign up for email campaigns from SaaS companies and then write up a teardown of those onboarding emails during a free trial. So by doing that, by consistently publishing and having it be like, it's the same format in every single one. I'm doing the same thing. It's just different brands across the board. So there's different feedback. But by doing that, I really established myself as this expert in this area of email onboarding, and at the time specifically for SaaS. Because of that, I was able to build an email list of people who wanted those onboarding teardowns. They weren't going to go to my blog on their own without a trigger, which the trigger was me emailing them about it. So I think like pick an area that you can speak to and that you feel good about speaking to very consistently for an extended period of time, and then keep publishing, keep talking to them.
Such good advice. Andrea Bassoni, he's asking, how often do you clean your list and how are you going to deal with new email services like Hey that block tracking? No open rate data.
Yeah. Email marketers are not worried about Hey. Mostly because Hey doesn't worry about us. There is such a small, in our little bubbles in the tech world, that feels like everybody has a Hey email address. Mm-hmm. And not to say that they won't. I mean, everybody at one time had a Hotmail email address, and like 12 people do now. There's a shift, right? Like everybody shifted to Gmail. Nobody has AOL now, except for my grandma. there's like these things change over time. So I'm not saying like Hey or something like it wouldn't come along and take the market share. But right now it doesn't. And so we're just not worried about it. When it starts to take more market share, then we'll start caring about it. We care a lot about big inboxes like Gmail, Yahoo, Outlook. Those are kind of the big ones. And Apple Mail. So, but there's so many inboxes that we just can't worry about every single one. And what was the other part of that question?
How often do you clean your list?
Oh yeah. As often as you need to. So, you know, I think like if you're a product-based brand, probably at least twice a year, look at, you know, okay, they haven't opened our emails for 6 months. Like, are they just really not interested? And then run a reactivation campaign before you clean your list. So always email them to say like, hey, unless you click on this or do this thing, we're going to take you off our email list. We don't want to fill up your inbox with stuff you don't want. So make sure that they have some kind of awareness of this happening. And then if they still aren't opening those emails, then you know, okay, they're not interested. And you can just let it go. So I think at least twice a year, but you can always do it more regularly.
Last one from John. What's the one thing brands spend too much time doing that they should stop?
Copying everybody else. So we all are using the same like Klaviyo and Shopify templates and doing whatever is like handed to us, like kind of taking the easy route. And I understand why. And I would challenge brands to dig a little bit more into why they're doing what they're doing. I had a Twitter thread about this last week, I think. You know, it's like we all are using this standard template of here's our brand header logo. Here's the one page or the one image email. And then we have our footer that has our social icons in it and all this stuff that like we see across the board. If you look at campaigns across the board, that's the kind of the standard. But my question is why? So you need to ask yourself why more often of like, is this serving a purpose? Are the social icons, like, are people clicking on those? Or is that click taking away from them clicking somewhere else in the email? If they click on the logo in the header, are they actually going to the homepage of the website or are they finding a PNG. You know, so like, why are we doing what we're doing? And then, and like, how can we do it in a way that serves our customers? And you don't know that until you talk to them.
Absolutely. Val, it was amazing having you. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
I could talk to you all day. So thanks for having me.
I think
me.
I went through like maybe 20% of the questions that I had for you.
I know. It's always like that. I can geek out about this stuff all day. If I could figure out a way to just get paid to talk to people all day about email, I would definitely do that.
I love it. But you're an amazing marketer and I love it. Not just email. You've got so much knowledge and wisdom. If people need help fixing their churn, where do they go?
They go to fixmychurn.com. You can reach out to us there. You can hit me up on Twitter. I'm there a lot at @loveValGeisler. Those are the two best places. So we do have there's an application form on the website, so you can fill that out and we'll get back to you. Or you can, you know, send me a DM, careful cause that's a black hole sometimes, but, you can also email hello@fixmychurn.com. We'll send you a link to that application just to make it easy.
Amazing. We're going to drop all of those ways of getting in touch with you in the show notes for today's episode.
Awesome.
Thanks again, Val. Thank you for joining. Thank you for listening. This is the DTC Growth Show by #Paid.